Dr. Safford Stockwell's luxury suite in the Shangri-La Hotel easily accommodated the expedition party. Five chairs had been positioned to surround a glass-topped coffee table, where a 2x3-foot topographic map lay open, anchored on the left and right by ashtrays. Remo took a seat with Audrey Moreland on his right, Pike Chalmers facing him across the table. Dr. Stockwell took a folding pointer from his pocket, snapped it open, and craned forward in his chair to start the briefing. He tapped the pointer on a spot on the map.
We are here, of course, in Kuala Lumpur, and our final destination is here.
The pointer slid a foot or so to Stockwell's left and settled on a patch of blue that had to be a lake, its several fingers splayed as if to mimic the impression of a malformed hand.
The Tazik Barra. It's 64.7 miles due east in Pahang province. It appears to be an easy trip on paper.
Easy nothing. That jungle's broken more good men than I can name.
As I was saying...
Stockwell caught himself just short of glaring at the Hulk.
It seems an easy trip on paper, but we have our work cut out for us. We'll have to make the trip in stages, starting with a flight tomorrow morning up to Termolo. From there, we take a riverboat due south, another 40 miles, to Dampar. That will be our jumping-off point, as it were. No airstrip at Dampar, you see.
No bloody road worth mentioning.
We'll meet our guide in Dampar. Deputy Sandakan has taken care of the arrangements there.
Indeed. We have engaged one of the best guides in the province for your expedition.
From the time we leave Dampar, it should take perhaps 3 days to reach the Tazik Barra proper. We will travel by canoe as far as possible, but I'm afraid there'll be some hiking at the end.
A bloody lot of hiking, Dr. Ward.
I'll keep up as best I can.
You haven't spent much time in Asia, have you, Dr. Ward?
Audrey Moreland touched his forearm lightly as she spoke, then casually withdrew her hand.
Please, Renton. And no, not much.
I've read your work on New World vipers. It was a fascinating piece of research.
This will definitely be a change from South America.
No end of bloody snakes, though. If that's what you care for.
Some of them must be dangerous.
There is some risk, of course, Dr. Moreland.
Audrey.
Yes, Audrey. Well, crates and cobras are the greatest hazard where we're going, though I doubt we'll be fortunate enough to glimpse a king cobra.
Oh, Lord, I hope not.
Audrey's round breasts wobbled slightly under the clinging fabric of her blouse.
Most of the Malaysian vipers, by contrast, tend to be smaller and less aggressive. The genus Trimerosaurus is widely represented, with both terrestrial and arboreal species, but they seldom trouble man unless directly threatened.
What about the big ones?
This time, Audrey let her fingers come to rest on Remo's knee.
Reticulated pythons are the ones to watch. Officially, the record is just over 32 feet.
Well, they must be dangerous as well.
Not unless you go out of your way to tackle one. Of course, there is one documented case in which a 14-year-old Malay boy was eaten by a 17-foot python. As it happens, that's the only case on record of a human being swallowed whole.
Oh, can you imagine being eaten up alive? Oh.
I wouldn't worry. You're much more likely to be eaten by mosquitoes.
Or the bloody crocs.
Chalmers scowled as he lit up an unfiltered cigarette.
No, we can't rule out a few stray crocodiles, of course. But the fact is, none are native to the area we'll be exploring.
Is that right?
Afraid so, Mr. Chambers.
Chalmers.
Sorry, my mistake.
Remo turned back toward Audrey, all smiles.
Crocodilus siamensis is the most common species in Southeast Asia, but its normal range cuts off about 200 miles due north of here. Now, Crocodilus porosus is larger, a certified man-eater, but its typical habitat runs toward coastal waters, hence the popular nickname of saltwater crocodile. It's possible that one might swim upstream along the Rompin here.
He pointed to the map, his elbow nudging Audrey's thigh in the process.
But it's not too likely.
Well, it's good to have an expert on the team.
We can all learn something, I imagine.
If we're lucky, we'll have bigger specimens to deal with than a crocodile in any case.
Now, Safford.
Yes, I know, Audrey. Mustn't get my hopes up. Even so, you won't mind if I keep my fingers crossed?
You think it's really possible to find a prehistoric creature in the Tazik Barra?
Prehistoric specimens are not uncommon, Mr. Sandakan, if truth be told. Why, the lowly cockroach is a prime example, and the crocodiles described by Dr. Ward have survived, more or less unchanged, from Proto-Suchus in the late Triassic period more than 200 million years ago.
Incredible. There is hope, then.
For a startling find?
The expedition's leader glanced at Audrey Moreland and smiled, restraining his enthusiasm with an effort.
I believe that in a region like the Tazik Barra, anything is possible.
We must be dazzling Dr. Ward. I mean, Renton.
I can use a little dazzling from time to time.
You've brought the necessary gear, Dr. Ward, I trust?
Hiking clothes, insect repellent, all that sort of thing. Back at my hotel, that is. I'll need a chance to pack.
We all have work to do in that regard. I propose that we adjourn and meet again for breakfast in the restaurant downstairs. Is 6 o'clock a.m. too early?
Not for me.
The others shook their heads in unison.
Till 6 o'clock, then.
Stockwell rose, a gesture of dismissal from the dean. Remo made his way in the direction of the exit. He was only halfway there when Dr. Audrey Moreland overtook him and stopped him with a warm hand on his arm.
I'm glad you've joined our little party, Renton.
So am I, Audrey.
I'll see you in the morning.
Bright and early.
I'll be looking forward to it, Renton.
Yeah, me too, Audrey.
So, what did you think of him, Audrey?
Of whom?
Safford Stockwell smiled indulgently.
Our Dr. Ward, of course. He caught your fancy, didn't he?
Oh, Safford, don't be silly. Just professional interest.
Doctors Moreland and Stockwell were still in Stockwell's suite, alone at last. But Stockwell didn't feel relaxed somehow. They were embarking, almost at the crack of dawn, on what would either be the crowning highlight or the most embarrassing fiasco of his long career. But there was something else on Stockwell's mind besides the hunt.
It's not a problem if you like him, Audrey.
I've barely met the man, for heaven's sake.
I'm simply saying...
What are you saying, Safford?
The question stopped him cold. It was an article of faith at Georgetown, where they taught and frequently took meals together, that there must be something going on between himself and Audrey Moreland. Stockwell didn't circulate the rumors, but he didn't bust his hump to contradict them either. In truth, he had been startled when the first such rumor came to his attention, overheard in passing. Surprise had quickly given way to irritation, but before he got around to setting anybody straight, Professor Stockwell, then a sprightly lad of 56, had felt a new emotion horning in. He had been flattered. It was something that at his age, that men who knew him well, several of them younger men at that, thought he had the looks, charm, and stamina to woo and hold a 30-something female with traffic-stopping looks and a vivacious personality. The ego strokes were even more rewarding when he learned that many women staffers also took the story at face value. They believed in him somehow. The lovely ego-stroking rumors kept on circulating, pumping up his self-esteem, and while he never made a move on Audrey Moreland, Stockwell had begun to think of them as, well, a couple. There was nothing to it, and he took himself to task on more than one occasion, but it felt good just pretending, and it did no harm. Except when he felt pangs of jealousy. That was the height of foolishness, he realized, and Stockwell had the common sense to keep those feelings secret, hidden from the world at large. Until tonight.
I'm sorry, Audrey. I didn't mean to come off sounding like your father.
I'm a big girl, Safford. I can take care of myself.
Of course, Audrey, of course.
It's sweet of you to worry, but I didn't fly halfway around the world to fall in love.
That wasn't what I meant. I was just curious to find out what you thought of Dr. Ward as an addition to our little family.
Some family. At least he's not like Chalmers. God, that man disgusts me with his swaggering and all that talk about the animals he's killed for fun.
Well, we need a man like Chalmers, Audrey, just in case, you understand?
He's still a bully, Safford, and I hate the way he looks at me, like he was ordering a piece of meat.
Has he done anything?
Not yet. I just don't like him. I don't trust him.
He comes highly recommended, Audrey.
By the old boy network, I've no doubt. They stick together, just like any other clique.
What is it that you think he's up to?
How should I know? If we find this creature, if there is a creature to be found, what would prevent his killing it on sight to make another trophy?
Stockwell longed to assume the role of noble hero, but he knew how it would sound. Pathetic boasting.
We will, Audrey. All of us. Remember Sandakan. He represents the state. Our Mr. Chalmers may be callous, But I don't believe he's up to challenging the whole Malaysian government, do you?
This animal we're looking for would be worth millions, Safford. Money in the bank. Of course.
She didn't have to finish the remark. He recognized her skepticism and tried to mirror it to keep himself from looking like a fool. A search for living dinosaurs was probably quixotic, possibly insane, but he had still leaped at the chance to head the expedition. Whether it was simple boredom with his teaching post and part-time work at the Smithsonian, or longing for a greater glory that would soon be hopelessly beyond his reach, Professor Stockwell had signed on despite the giggle factor, offering his solid reputation as a sacrifice. If they returned to Georgetown empty-handed, well, his job would still be waiting for him, thanks to tenure. In the meantime, there was no need to think about the personal humiliation he would have to face. A couple of the wags on campus were already calling him Professor Challenger, and they would have a roaring field day if he failed.
I'm confident that the authorities can deal with any problems of that nature. All we have to do is find the creature, yes?
You're right, of course. But I don't have to like him.
No, my dear, you certainly do not. Now, how would you like a glass of wine?
I'd better not.
She softened the rejection with a smile.
We've got an early start tomorrow, and I still have things to do.
I understand. I'll see you in the morning, then. Sleep well.
You too.
She left him, heading back to her adjoining room.
Do you believe their story?
Cebu Sandakan faced his superior across a massive teakwood desk, his bearing ramrod straight. He had to stop and think about the question, even now, though it had been a frequent topic of discussion at the office for the past few weeks.
I think their leader is sincere. I'm not sure even he believes, but there is hope. He yearns for immortality.
Gurmukh Sire, first deputy to Jantan Separu, the Minister of the Interior, looked intently at Cebu.
And what about the others? The Englishman loves money, sir. He will go wherever he is paid to go. And as for the new American, I think his curiosity is piqued, but he is skeptical.
He offered no opinion on the woman, nor was it requested. Cebu Sandakan and his immediate superior were of a single mind where females were concerned. This blonde American might be a full professor back in Washington, but it was still impossible for them to take her seriously as a guiding force behind the expedition. Women followed men. So it had always been. So it would always be.
And you, Cebu? What do you think about their chances? Of returning with a dinosaur? You have heard the Tassik Bara story, sir. You know of the reports from our own soldiers and police.
Indeed. I'm asking what you think.
I don't believe in fairy tales, sir. But who can say about such things?
The minister has some concern about this dead man, Harper.
Oh?
He was prospecting for uranium, as you're aware. You also know the circumstances of his death.
Yes, sir.
There is suspicion at the ministry. Some believe this party may be more concerned with mining than with monsters.
Customs has examined their equipment, I assume.
Within their limits, Cebu. It would not require much effort to conceal a simple Geiger counter, or to purchase one from sources in the country, if it came to that.
There are no mining experts in the party, sir.
None that we know of.
Sir?
Who knows if anyone is what he claims to be these days? A passport can be forged, biographies concocted out of nothing. The Americans are skilled at fabrication.
You believe their government may be involved?
The very notion boggled Cebu's mind.
I am suggesting only possibilities, Cebu. But then again, why not?
They would be risking much embarrassment.
With much to gain, Cebu. A fortune for the taking.
Surely we could not permit them to invade our sovereignty.
Americans are devious. They have been known to bribe officials, threaten economic sanctions when their will is thwarted, even sponsor revolutions to unseat a government if all else fails.
I will be vigilant, sir.
Is vigilance enough, I wonder?
Sir?
We must be ready to respond at the first sign of treachery. You understand?
Yes, sir.
You will carry this.
The deputy retrieved a plastic box, no larger than a cigarette pack, from an inside pocket of his coat and slid it toward Cebu across the desk.
It is a radio transmitter, specially designed for an emergency. You cannot send a message in the normal sense by speaking into it, nor is it able to receive. Simplicity dictates a single button that, when pressed, transmits a non-stop signal for the next 8 hours on a special frequency. From noon tomorrow until you return, the Ministry will have an armed security detachment standing by with helicopters, waiting for your signal.
Cebu Sandakan was even uneasier now.
What sort of an emergency?
You'll be the judge of that, Cebu. If the Americans should find uranium instead of dinosaurs, for instance, they will need immediate protection.
House arrest would be more like it.
Someone in the capital could always sort the matter out with an apology, by which time the uranium would be secure in native hands. That much was only fair. But he resented being drafted into work for which he wasn't trained or temperamentally inclined. Still, he couldn't refuse an order from the Ministry. The plastic box felt almost weightless in his hand. He stroked his thumb across the button, trying to imagine the reaction that a pound or two of pressure would evoke.
You will, of course, be circumspect about its use.
Yes, sir, certainly. What if...
Go on, Cebu.
What if the expedition is successful, sir?
What if they find a prehistoric animal, you mean?
Yes, sir.
Gurmukh Sayur could only smile.
In that case, they will also need protection, Cebu, will they not?
The Englishman...
must pose no threat to an endangered species, not when its survival could prove beneficial to the state.
I'm not sure.
Think of it, Cebu. The tourist trade we could attract. You've seen Jurassic Park?
No, sir, I don't think so.
Well, I recommend it highly. If museums can turn a profit from display of dusty bones, think what a modern and well-managed game preserve could do with living animals.
Sure. Yes, sir.
You're clear on your instructions, then. A signal in the case of an emergency, but no hysterics. If the party finds uranium or giant lizards, you must let us know immediately. Otherwise...
I understand.
In that case, you should get some rest. You have a great adventure waiting for you in the morning.
Yes, sir.
As he closed the office door behind him, pocketing the little radio transmitter, Cebu Sandakan was wishing he could pass the whole assignment off to someone else. A city boy at heart, he had no wish to camp out in the jungle, sleep beneath mosquito nets, and watch each step he took for fear of deadly snakes. The rest of it, the dinosaurs, uranium, and geopolitics, was all too much to cope with. He would simply have to watch and wait, be ready with the panic button at the first sight of a monster or duplicity from the Americans, whichever surfaced first. With any luck at all, he told himself, the whole excursion would turn out to be a waste of time. He could endure the laughter of his friends around the office for a week or two, until they found some new amusement for themselves. But the alternative was frightening. Cebu Bintulu Sandakan was worried that he might turn out to be one more endangered species in the trackless jungle, and a flying squad of soldiers would be precious little good to him if they arrived too late. Pike Chalmers lit his last unfiltered cigarette and crumpled up the empty pack, discarding it with no attempt to find a litter can. The Malays lived like rodents in his estimation, crowded cheek by jowl, the best of them perhaps two generations from the bush. Surrendering the colony had been one of Her Majesty's mistakes, like India, Jamaica, Kenya, and the rest, but it was no good crying over spilled milk now. That train had left the station, thank you very much, and it was never coming back. Pike Chalmers missed the glory days of empire, even though the bulk of it had been before his time. He had been 8 years old the year his father died, a victim of the Mau Mau uprising in Kenya. There were lean times after that, in Manchester, despite a soldier's pension for the widow and her son. It had been only natural for Chalmers to enlist when he was 17, but there were no great wars remaining to be fought. 3 tours in Northern Ireland were enough, and he had briefly gone the mercenary route in Africa before discovering that he could make more money killing helpless animals than stalking men with guns who might shoot back. Safari guides were always in demand. And when the namby-pamby greens began to flex their legislative muscles, curbing the majority of classic hunts, the flabby tourists with their cameras still required a man of courage and experience to take them out and bring them safely back again. But it was killing Chalmers loved. You could forget about the metaphysics of the hunt, conserving nature with a harvest of the weak, all that manure sportsmen ladled on their game to make it more politically correct. Back in the old days, you went out to shoot a rhino or a tiger for the fun of it, a stylish trophy, all the validation any man required. White hunters were admired for their abundant courage, knowledge of the wilderness, the number of their kills. It was a new world now, and Chalmers didn't like it much. Besides the hunting question, strident activists had poked their noses into everything from sex to smoking. A majority of Yanks had voted for a president who dodged the draft and promised higher taxes to protect them from themselves in any given situation. While at home, the royals had fallen into scandal and disgrace. Pike Chalmers often thought that he was born too late, a man whose time had come and gone before he made his way onto the stage. It would have pleased him to reverse the flow of time, skip 35 or 40 years back into history, and take his rightful place among the men who built an empire girdling the globe. But why stop there? If he could work a miracle, why not go back a century, get in at the beginning of the action, killing Zulus, Boers, Afghans? It had been open season in those days. Britannia ruled the waves, and it was easier to pack the white man's burden in a simple hearse than listen to the wogs and Kaffirs whine about their rights. Of course, there were no time machines, no miracles, but men of daring still got lucky now and then, despite the odds against them. Chalmers reckoned he was overdue for some good luck, the way things had been going in his life of late. And if a handful of his colleagues thought that he was balmy, signing on to join a dinosaur hunt, he knew that most of their remarks sprang out of envy. They were jealous bastards, seeing Chalmers land an easy job of work while they were left out in the cold. And what if it paid off? Suppose there was a bloody dinosaur waiting for them out there in the bush. Pike Chalmers couldn't keep from smiling as he thought about the possibilities. He could retire on profits from the book and movie rights, pick up a ghost to hammer out the manuscript for pocket change, and relocate to Ireland, where the writers live tax-free. Do all the talk shows like a bloody rock and roll star. He could well afford to let the Yank professors write their textbooks filled with charts and diagrams, all kinds of Latin jawbreakers that only another scientist would ever read. The real loot came from exploitation in the media. Pike Chalmers thought he might be forced to hire an agent if the money started pouring in too fast for him to handle. Life was hard, but he would do his best to cope. And if he felt like keeping all the glory for himself, then he could see his way to being the expedition's sole survivor. There were 100 easy ways to die in the Malaysian jungle, even when you didn't have a handy dinosaur around to gobble the remains. This lot were amateurs, babes in the woods. He could dispose of them as if they were nothing, never even break a sweat. Without the professors around, there would be no one to dispute Pike's version of events, whatever that turned out to be. Something heroic, certainly, to keep himself at center stage. He had begun to shop around for leading men to play his part in the inevitable movie when he caught himself. It was a grave mistake to count your eggs before they hatched, especially if they were dinosaur eggs. Pike Chalmers was no scholar, but he knew the odds were stacked against survival of a species thought to be extinct for umpteen billion years. Simple deductive thinking said the trip would be another paying job and nothing more. Or maybe not. They didn't have to find a bloody dinosaur for Chalmers to get something extra from the trip. That Audrey Moreland was a tasty dish and no mistake. Oh, she was giving him the brush right now, the way her kind so often did. But that was in a posh hotel, when she could call downstairs for room service to fetch her up a glass of bubbly anytime she chose. It was a different story in the jungle, when you said goodbye to feather beds, dry clothes, and decent food. The only running water in the Tazikbera would be rain and jungle streams. Her next-door neighbors would be snakes and scorpions and hungry tigers. Not to mention Chalmers, most dangerous of all. Before their little trek was finished, Audrey Moreland would acquire a new appreciation of his talents, not just on the trail, but in the sleeping bag as well. She might protest at first, but who was there to take her part against a real man when the chips were down? That brought his thoughts back to the new bloke, Dr. Renton Ward. A strange duck, that one. Didn't look like he could tear a piece of paper if he used both hands, but he had turned Pike's crushing grip around, and no mistake. The knuckles of his right hand still felt sore, as if he'd punched a concrete wall. Some kind of trick, no doubt, but Chalmers would be ready for him the next time. Keep an eye on that one all the way, damned right, and fix a nasty accident first chance he got. Pike Chalmers thought of Audrey flirting with the little bastard when she'd only just been introduced a moment earlier. There was no accounting for taste, of course, but she would find her choices strictly limited in 2 or 3 days' time. The old fart she was traveling with would never cut the mustard, and their native chaperone, well, he was just another bloody wog. It was an article of faith with Chalmers that all women wanted sex from men who showed them who was boss. Some needed more persuasion, but he never missed, except, of course, with lesbians. And he had shown a few of those what they were missing, too. A real man had the right, make that the duty, to extend himself where women were concerned. And Chalmers was a man who always tried to do his duty. Yes, indeed, there would be some surprises waiting for his snooty clients on the trail, and it would be a pleasure watching as they tried to cope. Pike Chalmers found that he could hardly wait. In fact, why should he wait? The night was young, and he was feeling lucky. First, a stop to buy more cigarettes. Then he would take a chance and roll the bloody dice.
None of your fellow travelers were startled to behold you in the flesh?
I couldn't tell, little father. It didn't seem that way.
White men neglect the art of observation.
I observed them well enough. Maybe one of them was covering.
Then you did not observe, Remo. There are always signals to betray a liar. Deviations in the normal pattern of respiration. Beads of perspiration at the hairline. Possibly a twitching of the eyebrows.
Nothing. I got the evil eye from their pet gorilla, but he doesn't strike me as a mastermind.
Did you reveal yourself to him?
Not really.
So you did?
A little squeeze when we shook hands is all, to put him in his place.
Put him on notice, you should say. He is a white man?
British.
You may be fortunate in that case, Remo. White men, in their ignorance, are blinded by the perfect glory of Shinanju. He will probably suspect that you pump iron and do aerobics with the round-eyed girls on television.
Remo finished packing, double-checked the bathroom and the closet for forgotten items, and finally closed his duffel bag.
You know, Chun, it's always possible that I was burned by someone else outside the team.
Chun's shrug was lost inside the folds of his kimono.
Anything is possible. An ape may learn to sing someday. But is it logical?
You're right.
Of course.
It made no sense, when Remo thought about it, for an outside force to want him dead. He was unknown outside of Cure, and his appointed cover was innocuous in the extreme. How many people outside academia had ever heard of Dr. Renton Ward, and how many of those would try to kill him in Malaysia, of all places? Even if the herpetologist was eyebrow deep in debt to the most vicious of New Orleans loan sharks, they would deal with him at home, where they controlled the playing field. And Cure would certainly have run a background check on Dr. Ward before they cut a deal to borrow his identity. No matter how he tried to scull it out, he kept returning to square one. The hit team in the central marketplace had been assigned to deal with Remo, or with Renton Ward, because someone was anxious to prevent his linking up with Dr. Stockwell's expedition. Motive was an unknown quantity, beyond deduction from the evidence in hand. What evidence? The thugs who tried to kill him were beyond confessing now. The only way for them to finger their employer would be through a Ouija board. That left 4 individuals who might have motives for disposing of the new man on the team with better than a dozen combinations possible if 2 or more of them were in cahoots. And so far, Remo didn't have a shred of proof connecting any one of them with the attempted hit. He gave up trying to divine why someone he had never met before should want him dead. The possibilities seemed endless. Anything from academic jealousy to common greed. Cure's background check had ruled out prior connection between Renton Ward and other members of the expedition. If there was an ancient grudge involved, one glimpse of Remo's face would be enough to tell the other party that they had a ringer on the team. Which brought him back to wondering how anyone, much less a desk-bound academic, could have blown his cover off this early in the game.
Where are you going?
Remo had to smile at that. He had been standing by his bed, immobile, staring at his duffel bag, but Chun could tell he was on the verge of going out. The old Korean never failed to keep him on his toes.
I thought I'd take a walk.
White man's logic. When confronted with a long trek through the jungle, you prepare by walking aimlessly around the city.
Chun, it's a form of relaxation. As you know, I don't need lots of sleep.
You need more training. A student who has barely scratched the surface of Shinanju should devote his every waking hour to the work.
First thing when I get back from dinosaur hunting.
I accede to this because Emperor Harold Smith demands it, but you are not prepared.
It's too bad you can't join us.
This frail old specter tramping through the jungle like a savage?
Chun was visibly appalled by the idea.
You wouldn't pass inspection anyway. No PhD.
True wisdom does not come from scrambling the letters of the alphabet behind your name.
You got that right.
Was there any doubt?
I'll be home soon.
Home is Shinanju. This is but a place to sleep and hang your clothes.
Don't watch the tube too late. You need your beauty sleep.
More slander. The Korean countenance, illuminated by Shinanju, is perfection multiplied.
Chun would always have the last word, even if he had to whisper in Korean. Remo let it go and closed the door behind him. Never mind the deadbolt. Any hotel burglar who might try to loot this room was in for a surprise. He took the stairs, 10 flights, and practiced running down the banisters for exercise. It would have helped to take his shoes off, but he managed nicely just the same. A pause before he went out through the lobby, checking out his pulse and respiration. Normal on both counts, despite the moderate exertion. Kuala Lumpur waited for him, light and darkness intermingled with the smells of frangipani, curry, and satay, the many Chinese food stalls, here and there a hint of backed-up sewage.
LTJ Bukum, tonight at Bukit Bintang! LTJ Bukum, tonight at Bukit Bintang!
Drum and bass.
Remo drifted toward the smaller side streets, watching out behind him without seeming to. If he was being followed, the pursuers were too skillful for his senses to detect them. That was always possible, of course, and yet... Within a quarter hour, Remo satisfied himself that no one had been waiting for him outside the hotel. He had some freedom now, and it would give him time to think. Chun was right about his need for exercise and practice, though. While he was thinking, he would also walk. He turned toward Market Street, 3/4 of a mile away, and melded with the darkness like a shadow. Audrey Moreland had no special destination when she left the Shangri-La Hotel. Her things were packed, and she didn't feel sleepy. Quite the opposite, in fact. She knew that it would be a waste of time to simply lie in bed, count sheep or some such nonsense, and she didn't feel like using chemicals to take the edge off her excitement. 8 more hours till they all convened for breakfast, and the trip would start within an hour to 90 minutes after that. She thought about the jungle and its secrets, waiting for her just beyond the glare of city lights that made the stars invisible, and wished that she was out there now, this minute, getting started on the quest.
Oh, calm down. It's coming. Get yourself worked up. You'll never get to sleep.
Which brought her back to thoughts of Dr. Renton Ward. He was a handsome man, not gorgeous in the standard movie star tradition, but she wouldn't kick him out of bed. There was a certain air about him that she didn't often sense in fellow scientists. A hidden sensuality, she thought, that would require some digging on her part to realize its full potential. There was confidence as well, beyond the sort that basked in the reflected glow of monographs and textbooks published. Renton Ward was not so much a man of science, she decided, as he was a man. She thought of poor old Safford then and had to smile. She was aware of the pathetic rumors circulating back at Georgetown, hinting at some great affair between herself and Dr. Stockwell. She encouraged the absurd belief as best she could, for reasons of her own. It kept the other campus Romeos at bay, for one thing, and it also seemed to satisfy her self-styled mentor, the illusion of a love affair relieving him from any need to stumble through the motions on his own. Tonight, ironically, had been the first time Stockwell showed her any warning signs of jealousy. Perhaps their change of scene to the exotic East had goaded him to speak. In any case, she knew the situation would bear watching. There was no point leading Safford on, provoking some misguided confrontation he was sure to lose. Try as she might to focus on the object of her visit to Malaysia, Audrey's thoughts strayed back to Renton Ward. Pike Chalmers didn't like him, that was obvious. But Chalmers had a major ego problem. God's gift to women, and a one-man mutual admiration society to boot. It made her skin crawl when he stared at her, undressed her with a gaze that felt like clammy hands on her flesh. She knew exactly what he wanted from the moment they were introduced. He needed to be watched on the trail, where true to type, he might revert to original primitive man, though she wasn't certain those progenitors deserved such a comparison. The crunch would come if Chalmers tried to act on his desires, take what he fancied, and to hell with her consent.
El DJ Bogom, tonight at Bogomatang!
Oh, drum and bass. Oh well.
The nightclub looked like any other tourist trap in Southeast Asia. Geckos clinging to the wall around a garish neon sign. But Audrey didn't mind. It was a change from the hotel, and a diversion from the omnipresent native vendors with their handicrafts, who made the city seem like one huge marketplace. Inside the smoky, strobe-lit club, a cut-rate stereo was throbbing with the pulsating music. A smiling hostess looked around for Audrey's escort, finally grasped that she was on her own, and led her to a table near the bar.
You are American?
That's right. Is there a problem?
Turaxi, sir! No problem!
Coming back with Audrey's rum and coke, the hostess also brought a tiny U.S. flag, its toothpick staff embedded in a piece of cork, and placed it on the table, near the scented candle that was Audrey's only source of light besides the flashing strobes.
Terima kasih.
Sama-sama!
Of course.
The flag would label her as a tourist so that no man in the club mistook her for a prostitute on call. In some parts of the world, the little banner would have been a magnet for hostility, perhaps inviting physical attack. But there was no great dislike for Yankees in Malaysia. If all went well, she could enjoy a drink or three in peace, unwind a bit, and then walk back to the hotel in time to catch some sleep before her scheduled wake-up call at 4:30.
We're both alone, I take.
She recognized the voice with a sinking feeling. She didn't even need to turn around.
Hello, Pike.
Pike Chalmers loomed like a grizzly bear beside her table. What rotten luck for her to pick the very bar where he was killing time. Or was it simply luck? Could he have followed her from the hotel?
Hello, Audrey.
What a surprise.
Mind if I join you then?
The truth is...
Marvelous.
He pulled the second chair out, carried it around the table to her left, and settled in beside her.
There we are, all nice and cozy then.
I can't stay long. LTJ Pookum's about to come on, and I don't want to be around for that.
No problem. Here you are then, waitress. Yeah, double whiskey, neat. Ah, there we go. You know, Audrey, I couldn't sleep myself. Too much excitement, what?
I wouldn't think there's much about a trip like this you haven't seen before.
You never know.
Chalmers stared at her breast. She felt the nipples pucker with embarrassment and knew that he was bound to misinterpret the reaction. If only she had worn a jacket, or at least a bra.
I understand you have experience in the Malaysian jungle.
Love, I've got experience around the world. You name it. Africa, the Amazon, New Guinea, India. You know, one jungle's fairly like another when you're on the ground. New predators to watch out for, of course, but that's my specialty.
So I was told.
Well, one of my specialties at least.
The wink made Audrey want to scream. This man was one great chauvinist cliché personified, an oinker in the first degree. She felt a sudden need to take him down a peg or two.
I've never understood the thrill attached to killing helpless animals.
She still smiled as an angry flush suffused his features.
Helpless? Love, there's nothing helpless in the bush except a man with no experience. Bloody ants and flies can kill you, never mind the tuskers, cats and buffalo. You ought to see the souvenirs I'll carry on my hide sometime. You might stop sympathizing with these beasts and have a bit of care for me.
But surely, when you make a special trip to kill them with your traps and guns, whatever they do to you is self-defense.
The hunter's smile turned brittle.
Self-defense, you say? It may seem different to you on a trail when you've got hungry jackals or a tiger sniffing at your tent flaps. You'll be bloody glad to have a man beside you then.
Let's hope it never comes to that. If you'll excuse me.
Audrey rose to leave, her drink untouched. But Chalmers gulped his whiskey down and bolted to his feet.
The streets aren't safe this time of night.
Ridiculous. This is the safest city in the world outside of Asmara.
Well, that may be true.
Up here, Pike.
Hey? Oh, what?
My eyes, up here.
Oh, Well, I'll walk you home, love. Tuck you in all safe and sound.
If you insist.
Oh, I do indeed.
The club on Market Street held no attraction for Remo, with its smoky atmosphere and reek of alcohol. He would have passed it by without a second thought, except that Audrey Moreland chose that very moment to emerge, with Pike Chalmers almost treading on her heels.
Ba-dum-bum-bum. Well, what do we have here?
They made an awkward couple standing on the sidewalk for a moment, as if neither one of them could find the proper words to end a dismal date. A second glance at Chalmers, though, and Remo knew he wasn't anxious for the night to end. As for the look on Audrey's face, it could be anything from boredom to an alcoholic daze. He didn't know her well enough to judge, beyond a vague impression that she seemed unhappy in the big man's company. So much for aimless rambling. Remo faded back into the shadows of a nearby alley, waited while the mismatched couple shared a few more words, then turned back in the general direction of the Shangri-La. He gave them half a block, then fell in step behind them, pleased that he could follow someone for a change, instead of watching out to see if he was being tailed. They covered half a dozen blocks before Pike Chalmers made his move. The street was narrower than most, lights few and far between. From 20 yards behind, Remo saw Chalmers drape his arm across the woman's shoulders, Audrey flinching from his touch as if the arm had been electrified.
Now, love, don't be that way.
Don't touch me.
Audrey took a quick step backward, wobbling on her heels.
Ugh.
You don't mean that, not deep down.
I mean exactly that, you oaf.
Oaf, is it? Well, that rhymes with loaf. And I've got a loaf just right to fit your oven, dearie, or I'm very much mistaken.
Remo moved up on silent feet with the speed of wind and was immediately behind them.
It's a small world after all.
Pike Chalmers swung around to face him, squinting in the dark, then sneering as he recognized the face.
Too bloody small. You'll shove off if you know what's good for you.
Is there a problem here?
Yes.
No problem, mate.
Audrey moved to stand at Remo's side, warm fingers resting lightly on his biceps.
Would you walk me back to the hotel?
No problem.
You sure of that, Dr. Ward? I believe you'll find there is a problem when you start to meddle in another man's affairs.
You're drunk, friend. Maybe you should hit the sheets so you don't miss the flight tomorrow, huh?
I'll hit your bloody sheets, you scabby little poof!
Chalmers put his weight behind the swing, but it was nothing special. Remo pulled his punch to keep the Hulk alive. It was still enough to drop him in his tracks, out cold before he hit the pavement. Dr. Moreland gaped at Chalmers, laid out in the street.
My God, what happened?
Oh, dear. I suppose he slipped and hit his head. We could try and carry him back to the hotel.
Forget about it. He can sleep it off right here for all I care.
Well, if you're sure...
I'm sure. If someone rips his wallet off, it serves him right.
She looped her arm through Remo's, and they put the fallen Hulk behind them, crossing over to Jalan Pudu and starting on the loop back to the Shangri-La.
I'm glad you came along back there. It could have gotten ugly.
Or you should be more careful choosing dates.
Bite your tongue, Dr. Ward. I wouldn't date that caveman on a bet. He saw me in the club and... Oh, well, never mind. I wanted Safford, Dr. Stockwell, to get rid of him. But he's supposed to be the best at what he does.
Which is?
Shoot animals. Great white hunter, don't you know?
I didn't understand this was a hunting expedition.
Well, you're right, of course. It isn't. But we had to make some kind of gesture toward security and all that sort of thing. There was insurance to consider, and the truth is, I don't want to find a lion in my tent if I can help it.
Lions live in Africa.
Anyway, I'm told the hired gun stays, unless he's cracked his skull and can't go on tomorrow. God, you don't suppose we'll have to push the trip back and look for a replacement?
I suspect he'll be all right, but I wouldn't want the headache he'll find waiting for him in the morning.
Serves him right. But enough about that creep. I understand you're from New Orleans?
Not originally.
Remo tapped into the file Cure had compiled on Renton Ward.
I've worked there for the past 8 years, but I'm from Kansas, if you trace it back.
What got you hooked on snakes?
Well, Dr. Moreland, what got you hooked on plants that died 100 million years ago?
Touché. Well, I guess it crept up on my blind side, Renton. I was into botany and horticulture as a freshman out in California, when I took a course on prehistoric life. It was supposed to fill a blank spot in my schedule. No big challenge, but it got me thinking. How can a species dominate the Earth for several billion years and then just fade away? I mean, if we can solve that riddle, There's a chance we still might save ourselves, you know?
Are we in danger of extinction?
Every day. We've got pollution, air, sea, and land, overpopulation, and a lot of shaky fingers on the trigger that could blow us all away. So what if Russia fell apart? It's not like one regime was causing all the problems in the world. Hey, what's the joke?
She caught him smiling and seemed about to take offense. Remo moved to head her anger off.
No joke. It's just that you sound more like someone who should be out leading demonstrations than collecting fossils.
I do both when I have the time. And what about yourself?
I mostly hang around the Serpentarium and milk my snakes.
When you say it that way, it sounds positively lecherous.
It gets to be a handful.
I can imagine. What's your favorite?
Snake? That has to be the King Cobra. 12 feet of solid muscle. One dose of his venom is enough to kill 100 men. We have a mated pair back in New Orleans.
And you handle them?
I milk each of them once a month.
You must be very brave.
It keeps me on my toes. The other snakes are dangerous, of course. The rattlers, coral snakes, moccasins, the bushmaster. But if you mess up with the king, you're history.
You must have magic hands.
It's all in the wrist.
You'll have to show me sometime how you do it.
Have you got a snake?
We'll improvise.
That could be challenging.
You must keep busy in New Orleans. I've read about the women there in the French Quarter.
Well...
Come on now, Renton. Please don't tell me you're a monk.
I don't have much free time.
It's a good thing that we got you then, before you waste away. All work, no play, etc., etc.
I understood this was a working expedition, Doctor.
I thought we'd been over this already. Audrey, please.
All right, Audrey.
It is, of course. But there's no law that says we can't enjoy ourselves along the way now, is there?
Not that I'm aware of.
Well, there you go.
They were a block south of the Shangri-La and gaining fast. When Audrey saw the progress they had made, she dropped her grip on Remo's arm and took his hand.
You know, you saved my life tonight.
I doubt that very much.
My honor, then. The proverbial fate worse than death.
Something tells me you make out all right on your own, Audrey.
Oh, I do, Renton. But it's more fun with two.
So I'm told.
You deserve a reward from the damsel in distress.
I'll have to take a rain check, Audrey. Gear to pack, that kind of thing.
A rain check?
If that's permissible.
You do know where we're going, don't you?
Well.
Rainforest all the way.
She rose on her toes to kiss him lightly on the corner of his mouth.
You get some sleep now. Save your strength.
I'll see you in the morning.
And don't forget to pack your rubbers. It gets wet here in the bush.
I'll bet it does.
The woman has desire for you, Remo?
It looks that way to me, little father.
Chun reached out and thumped him on the forehead with a bony index finger.
Ow! Think with this head, always. Sex is a temptation to be overcome, an instrument to be employed for higher purposes. It is the nature of the female to deceive.
I hear you, Chun.
Yes, Remo, but do you listen?
Well, my ears are ringing at the moment.
Always joking, like a monkey in the zoo.
I have to go.
Remo glanced at his watch.
It wouldn't do for me to miss the kickoff.
Chun was seated in his customary place before the television, even though the set was not turned on.
Remember, we're supposed to overcome temptation and employ our instruments for higher purposes.
Whatever. I'm going now.
Watch the big man. It was negligent of you to let him live.
You may be right, little father.
Remo waited for the elevator, passing up the stairs this morning on a whim. Killing Chalmers on the street in front of Audrey Moreland would have caused innumerable problems off the top, including a police investigation and delay of their departure for the Tazik Barra. As it was, the hulking Brit had either learned a lesson or he hadn't. Either way, his clumsy fighting style would pose no major challenge.
Just remember not to let him get behind you with a gun.